Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Canadian Energy Services and Technology Corp conference call and webcast with respect to the recently announced results for the fourth quarter ended December 31st, 2015. Presenting for the company today will be Mr. Tom Simons, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Craig Niebuhr, Chief Financial Officer. Please be advised this call is being recorded. A question and answer session will follow the end of the presentation. Please also be advised that this conference call may not be recorded or rebroadcast without the express consent of Canadian Energy Services. I would now like to turn the conference call over to Mr. Craig Niebuhr, Chief Financial Officer of Canadian Energy Services and Technology Corp. Please go ahead, Mr. Niebuhr.
Good morning, everyone, and thanks for attending today's call. Before we start, I'd like to note that in our commentary today, there will be forward-looking financial information and that our actual results may differ materially from the expected results due to various risk factors and assumptions. These risk factors and assumptions are summarized in our Q4 MD&A, our Q4 press release, and in our annual information form dated March 10, 2016. In addition, certain financial measures that we will refer to today are not recognized under current generally accepted accounting policies, and for description and definition of these, please see our fourth quarter MD&A. I will start off today with a quick and brief cover of the Q4 financial and annual financial results, and then as usual, Tom will get into a very detailed discussion of where we are operationally and where we're going forward. So obviously, everyone, Q4 results are reflective of the very difficult industry conditions that all of us are facing and the reduced pricing and lower activity as a result of commodity prices. Revenue in Q4 of $165 million is down from Q4 2014 of $278.7 million, which is a 41% decrease. Annually in 2015, we did $749.6 million, down from $972.7 million, which is a 23% decrease year over year. But obviously, a lot of that decrease is back end weighted in the back half of the year. Adjusted EBITDAC for Q4 of $16.4 million is significantly down from our EBITDAC of Q4 2014 of $47.6 million. It's down 66%. Annualized adjusted EBITDAC of $101.6 million is down 43% from the annualized $177.2 million we achieved in the previous year. In addition, reflective of the current conditions, we have recorded a goodwill impairment at December 31st of $155 million. $39 million of that's been booked to our Canadian drilling fluids businesses, and $116 million of that booked to the U.S. drilling fluids business. I will now move on to talk about the balance sheet. Despite the current operating challenges, CES's balance sheet is well positioned to weather the current downturn in oil field activity. We have a net nil draw on our amended senior facility, and our $300 million of senior notes are not due until April 2020. I will remind listeners, we entered 2015 with a $60 million draw on our operating line, along with our $300 million unsecured notes. We exited 2015 with a nil draw, and we have funded all CapEx, dividend, and an acquisition of Cielco in 2015 out of generated cash flow. We are very well positioned to weather this downturn in our minds. Since January 1st, we have added about $20 million of cash to the balance sheet. However, due to the weaker activity, and we have disclosed that in our materials that we released yesterday, we are in the process of proactively dealing with our banking syndicate to achieve some covenant relief, in particular the total debt to EBITDA covenant of 4.5 times and our interest ratio, or interest coverage ratio, to give us, make sure we have headroom as we go through this. But once again, $20 million of cash on the balance sheet, and the only debt we owe is due in 2020. At this time, I'll turn it over to Tom Simons to talk about the detailed operational update and the go forward.
Thank you, Craig. Good morning, everyone. As customary, I'm going to give a detailed operations update of our four business units, Canadian drilling fluids, U.S. drilling fluids, Canadian production specialty chemicals, U.S. production specialty chemicals. There's some unique conditions occurring in each of the businesses, and they are specific to each country, so I'm going to take callers through that. We're going to talk about what we see in the near term, what we see in the longer term for our business, and update listeners on some accomplishments that the business has had. Operationally in Q4, the business continued to hold a little over 30% market share in the drilling fluid market in Canada. As oil legged down in November, December, operators were reducing their spend and obviously continually requiring lower pricing. We are right-sizing the business in Canada for drilling fluids as we speak. We are going to preserve our team that can keep us in that business, keep us what we think is best in class for execution. We are 100% committed as a company to being in the drilling fluid business. It is an outlet to sell chemistry. It is a lead to sell frac chemistry. And obviously, it helps establish your position with your customer to treat their production and pipelines. In the U.S., we held about 10% of the market in Q4. We continue to hold that today in the U.S. We think we're below 30% in Canada today if the Nichols information is right. I personally think there's a lag on their numbers. We're pretty hard on ourselves in terms of what we consider activity. If pipe's not turning to the right and they're not mixing product, it's not on our internal lists. So my sense is that Canadian activity today is actually softer than what's in the public domain. So I'm sure people want to know what happened. How do you, in a cost-plus business, go to paper-thin margins when you have a third of the market and a tenth of the market? The reasons are a little different in each country. We continue to have the ability to make a little bit more money in the Canadian market than the U.S. market. And primarily, it is because Big Mud, so the big three service companies, have hardly any share of this market. What's different in the U.S. is they have probably 80% of the market. And what practically has happened is that 1,000 drilling rigs in the U.S. have stopped drilling. And on each one of those rigs is 200 to 300 cubic meters, so 12 to 1,800 barrels of oil-based mud, so it's diesel, distillate, or expensive synthetic oil that people like us turn into a drilling fluid in a mud plant. We emulsify brine in it, put chemistry in it, alter the density, make many adjustments through chemistry to stabilize the well, lubricate the pipe and bit, and drill the well. These mud plants are not built to store this mud. They're built to make it. So as the music has stopped, there's no chair for somewhere between 1.5 and 2 million barrels of what until a year ago was an asset that you either sold when it was lost downhole or to cuttings or solids control on surface. It's instead become a liability to Big Mud. So they've done what makes sense. Instead of paying environmental companies to dispose of this stuff because they have nowhere to put it unless they want to rent every frac tank in America, they're trying to turn a negative into a positive. They're doing what I would do. And I'll add, we don't run quite as loose of a business as some of our big competitors, so we are not swimming in oil-based mud. We haven't needed to do what they've done, but the market will only bear what the majority do. And what they have done is propose to customers that they want to get on location with, build a relationship with, for all understandable reasons. They're putting this oil-based mud that a year ago was worth $1,000 to $1,200 a cubic meter. They're putting it on location for zero. Instead of paying someone to take it or paying a tank company to rent tanks to store it, they're using it as a tool to get on location. So what that has done, as we kind of as an industry pass through this threshold where there was nowhere for this to go this past fall, that has hammered margins on that part of the mud invoice. There is that bulge that has to work through the system, and depletion of that volume is slow because there's only 400 rigs in the U.S. mixing mud every day. So that stuff has to work through the system. We want callers to understand that there's 6 months to maybe a year to work that through the system. Our commitment to the mud business is 100% because long term it remains a cost plus business. This zero value oil based mud, once it's gone, that's off. You can't build that stuff out of diesel or distillate or synthetic oil and chemical and give it to people for nothing. This is an unusual time, and our competitors are doing the smart thing and trying to turn it to their advantage. So we think that people need to know those kinds of specifics. I call us around here working managers. We still sell work. We try to stay current technologically as managers. We understand as owners of the business what's going on the street, on location. We accept that. We know that's part of what's happening right now. As I have said, we're unwavering in our commitment to that business. What we do need to do is right-size those businesses. And for our drilling fluid business, we need to compensate people where the market will bear. So we're taking our people through that. We're going to keep our top people. Our message to our people is you need to sell mud, mix mud, or develop mud technology. There's nowhere else to hide in the industry right now. You have to do one of those things to create value. So we're committed to that business. To give some color to Canada, March to June is going to be tough. Nobody's going to drill. Why would they? We are not swimming in volume in Canada. Us and a competitor have over half the market. I think both of us run lean, efficient businesses. So we're not in a position in Canada where the base volume for the system that you put chemistry into every day needs to be zero. The products certainly need to be low priced. You need to be very competitive. We are able to stay in the black in the Canadian and U.S. drilling fluid business because we're vertically integrated as a business. The chemistry, polymers, and minerals that go into these systems are largely self-supplied. So we can be where the customer requires us to be, where the market is, and stay in the black. But people should understand that it'll be barely. It's going to be a tough year for our business. It's going to be a tough year for our industry. But long term, we're totally committed to that space. I'll repeat myself. These mud customers are leads for frac chemistry. They are leads for treating production and treating their pipelines. And long term, we believe that there is going to be a vibrant enough upstream sector that's a place you want to be in business. It's CapEx light. You build inventory and you turn it. For our production chemical business, as callers will have seen in our disclosure, we've created a metric for people around treatment points. We are treating more production and more production points than ever in our history. J-Chem and PureChem continue to win market share. It's through a combination of technology and application expertise. I think I need to take callers through circumstances that are happening in that business as well. We continue to be in the black in those businesses. J-Chem more so than PureChem because it's more of a mature or built-out business today. We continue to put people on the ground in Canada ahead of the work, so that the customer has a legitimate reason or confidence to give you the new business. But practically what's happening at the wellhead is that the production people at the oil company are fighting to keep their jobs. They need to get the lifting costs for their oil company below what it costs or what their cash flow is at $35 oil. So the first thing that's happened over the last year is all the chemical providers have needed to lower their price to their customer. We have the ability to have done that, have kept our work, and have grown our market share as a manufacturer of the chemistry. So we've stayed in the black in both businesses while accommodating required price concessions. These relationships with our customers clearly cannot be one-sided. We know that they are losing money producing oil. But practically what is now happening at the field level, where the production person for the oil company is not just highly empowered but has responsibility to lower lifting costs, is that people are optimizing, which is code for using less preventative chemistry. You can't compromise what would affect production. So emulsions, paraffin, asphaltenes, things that immediately affect productivity in the wellbore, that's not on the table. But if 10 gallons of corrosion inhibitor or scale inhibitor was the right treatment yesterday, today the right treatment is 6. You can cut your costs at the wellhead short term by optimizing or reducing treatment. So everyone in the chemical business is seeing this happen. Part of the good thing about it is you need to be very dialed in on application, on how to do that short term and not long term impair your wellbore or your pipeline. People will live with higher metal loss and some scaled deposition for a while so that they can stay in business. The people in the industry understand that oil companies and service companies with maturing bonds cannot refinance those things today. They're aware that businesses are going to go down, and in my opinion, human nature's kicking in. People are doing what it takes to survive. So we are working with our customers to optimize, which obviously affects revenue, it affects margin. It's a short-term fix to get through low oil. As a business, we are going to slow pedal all CapEx through 2016. We may even delay finishing nitrile to the end of the year. As a business, we're going to survive. And what does it take for us to survive? We need to preserve and improve our balance sheet. So what we see happening as drilling continues to drop is that we're going to unwind working capital. We're going to put that cash on the balance sheet. We think we have a legitimate plan to stay in the black in Canadian mud, U.S. mud, certainly in J-Chem and PureChem. We're going to avoid bad debt if humanly possible. We're going to right-size people and compensation in our drilling businesses. We're going to focus on building out new business to provide chemistry for E&Ps at the frac spread in the U.S. In Canada, we're going to continue to focus on the frac market to the pumpers. We think that for us to be a legitimate player in that business, we need to have one of the two backbones that are in fracs. So it's either cross-linked guar or it's polyacrylamide that's used in slick water. To be a player in the frac business for guar, you need to have the ability to slurry that stuff all across North America. This isn't the time for us to build blend plants across America. So we're focused on being basic, either through supply channels with partners or manufacturing of polyacrylamide, which we think gives us the chance to then sell scale inhibitor, biocide. We're very excited to bring to market a new technology that we believe is going to help us help people make more initial production on their fracs. People are familiar with what competitors call nanotechnology. We've got a new technology on the shelf that's a microemulsion chemistry that is now part of our product lineup through Cielco. It's chemistry that's used in pulp and paper. Initial lab results look very encouraging. This stuff lowers surface tension in the rock and allows better initial productivity and then ultimate recovery. As a service company today, it's all about two things: lowering lifting costs and growing production. And if you can't do one or both of those things, the operator can't spend 1 cent on your service. I'd like to add some sort of important and noteworthy accomplishments for the company through Q4 and today. Our barite mill is live. It's crushing rock. At today's rig count, it probably takes us 6 years to pay for that mill. We're actively looking for people that we can crush minerals for to keep throughput in that plant at a reasonable level so that we get the cost benefit of crushed barite on location in the U.S. Longer term, building that mill is the right thing for us to have done. We think we want to be in the mud business in the States, and you need to be basic in that stuff to hold 10% and ideally take it up in a better market. Late March, early April, we will be ISO certified in all of our manufacturing operations. We think this is very important for a couple of reasons. As bigger fish eat smaller fish in the industry, which we believe is certain to happen for our customers, it's not just going to be PE buying failed companies. You need to meet QC standards for these super majors or very big companies. ISO gets us there. The other important thing for us is that we believe this helps us expand Cielco's existing cosmetics, personal care, and pulp and paper business. Basically, instead of having one plant that meets QC standards for those industries, we have two. It improves logistics for our customers. We're not losing our focus on energy, but it's a nice development for us. As I said, Barite is live. Our Midland lab today is being equipped. I was in it Tuesday morning. It's a spectacular facility. It's going to sell product because we're going to be closer to the problem that we need to solve for the customer. That is going to win business. It's going to create margin long term. Our Woodlands lab is being equipped today. We're going to have a flow loop in it. That's a device that allows us to measure friction reduction in these slick water fracs with polymers. That's an important tool for us to build off these mud relationships and sell frac fluids. The Calgary lab and tech center is 80% equipped. That facility is and will help us sell product because it helps solve problems closer to where they occur. The heavy oil and oil sands market for production chemicals, I'll remind people, is estimated by CAP at $800 million a year. So we may have political headwinds in this country around getting oil to tidewater, but existing production today in that market requires a massive amount of chemistry, and the solutions are very complex. So this tech center is going to pay us back in spades over years. I'll repeat, we're 100% committed to being in the drilling fluid business. We think it's a launch pad for the frac fluid business. We're very pleased that JChem and PureChem are picking up market share, but we want people to understand that practically there's less margin to make because of price, and there's volume reductions because preventative treating is being reduced so that the customer can survive to make money later. I'm going to turn the rest of the call over to Craig, and then we're pleased to take questions.
Actually, we're ready to take questions, so we'll open the call to all the listeners for questions.
At this time, I'd like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from Dan McDonald with RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, guys. Just wanted to clarify, Tom, with your comments around the barite mill, safe to say, given how low activity is, it's going to be, you know, kind of a number of quarters really before you can get much of a kind of a cost savings benefit or ultimately a benefit to margins at some point from that mill?
Yeah, it might even be fall, Dan. The pile of barite that's sitting in Brownsville that the third-party mill has ground for us, you know, that pile would have lasted 30 days a year ago. Today, that pile is going to last 3 to 5 months. And obviously, we need to plow through that stuff. But we're live with product, and longer term, West Texas and Eagleford, there's a big win for us there.
Okay, thanks. And then just kind of trying to look at the bright side of what's become an incrementally harder market for you, you know, are you seeing anything more interesting on the acquisition front, you know, perhaps sellers getting a bit more motivated to come back to the table, and then sort of what, you know, what would you potentially find most appealing?
Well, what is most appealing or highest value to us is chemistry businesses that treat production or pipelines, followed by chemistry businesses that are in the stimulation or workover market. Operators are spending money to work wells over because it's obviously way less money than a new frack today. What we are seeing practically is that there are PE-owned chemical companies or private chemical companies that want to sell themselves to save themselves. If guys are not basic or at least blending in very established and very technically capable in how you apply the stuff, they've went from 20% EBITDA margins to being in the red. So what we would act on is stuff that can grow our footprint for JChem or PureChem in Canada in those markets, Dan. The biggest thing for us is, can we work with the people? Do people want to take chips off the table to be part of something that they think longer term is going to succeed, or are they trying to get out? We're not going to give anyone money to get out. We obviously need to be cautious with that, but I think our track record, we're 10 years public last week, it's been pretty good. We're not just good at reading customers. I think we're good at reading private business owners. So we're absolutely open for business to grow in those areas, but it's obviously got to cost the right amount of money. And then most importantly, are people going to stay, and can one and one get to three?
Do you think those opportunities have felt, you know, kind of quite enough pain yet, Tom, or is time going to kind of be on your side if we think more potentially maybe back half of the year or something that might be more attractive?
Well, our responsibility to the business, Dan, is we can't pay someone off 13 or 14 results. We need to pay them off today's results. So, you know, our proposition to someone, you know, hypothetically, you have someone in the U.S., why do they want to sell at the bottom? Because they're already waiting on oil to go up because they're in the oil field. So it, arguably, they reduce their risk because they're part of a bigger enterprise. So we need to have someone that can see that and wants to partner with us to ride oil back up. But the other interesting thing is, a Canadian-based company is an American. If they're smart, they can make money on the currency. Canadian dollar is probably going up when oil goes up. So if you have a private business in the U.S. and you take our equity, you might make 20% just on the currency. So we're not going to throw stock around like it's free, but I like our position as a Canadian business to do M&A in the U.S. We have an advantage over arguably other buyers.
Great. That's all I got. I'll turn it back over. Thanks, Tom.
Your next question comes from Mark Westby with AltaCorp Capital. Your line is open.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
So first, just touching on your production chemicals treatment points, which you've now provided, you know, have you seen any shift in the type of work associated with these treatment points over time? Like, is there a shift to certain higher or lower margin work, or higher or lower revenue work over the past few years, or outside of pricing pressure, obviously?
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to charge less, Mark. These, you know, repeating myself, these are relationships. And when you're selling to someone who loses money every time they do something, you have to charge less, unless you want to go home. But what we have seen as a change is that people are reducing preventative treatments so that they can get their lifting costs down. It's the fastest way to do it. It's a short-term fix, but I mean, everyone calls it optimizing. It's using less. You cannot do that around what affects productivity. You can't let your battery go wet, so you can't cut back on emulsion breaker. You shouldn't cut back on asphaltene control, paraffin control, but you can cut back on biocide a bit, scale, corrosion. You can cut some corners there. And so, understandably, people are doing that. That affects revenue. I mean, you charge for that stuff. Corrosion and scale they're the two biggest chemistries that the industry moves.
Okay, and with regard to your preventive treatments, would those typically be higher margin business than your other traditional treatments, or is that kind of a lower margin business traditionally?
In the production chemical business, the lowest margin is emulsion breaker, and from there, everything is unique to that reservoir or field and often even wellbore. So you've got different formulations and different chemistry. So yeah, it's all higher margin. There isn't a pass-through in the production chemical business like there is in the mud business with minerals or these oil-based muds that today are worth in the U.S. zero. So it's all higher margin stuff. So you're taking high margin stuff off the table and you're lowering volumes and revenue. I mean, our goal is to treat more production. We're obviously going to focus on trying to work for people that can pay us. So we're focused on creditworthy businesses. We're still fanatical about AR. We can be creative with people. We can get half the money up front and half of it in 15 or 30 days for people that look like they might be in trouble. So there's practical ways you can work with people to help get them through and not expose yourself too much.
In addition to that, DeMarc, just for listeners' benefit, and we've been talking about this back in 2014 when OPEC decided to let production run, we went out and insured our U.S. receivables for the year of 2015. We have renewed that trade credit insurance over our U.S. book of business for 2016. There's deductibles and limits, of course, but we think that would also take the edge off of some of the noise in the system about potential bankruptcies and Chapter 11s in the U.S. for the oil field.
Okay, great. And my next question, you mentioned how things are getting a little more challenging for middlemen and resellers from the point of view of just a cost basis. And in the past, you've noted that, for example, you've been approached directly by producers in the U.S. Are you seeing similar trends in Canada now? Like how is this shifting from the U.S. to Canada? And, what are some anecdotes or trends that you're seeing specifically in that regard?
Well, the trend across the industry, I think all service people are seeing the same thing, is that you're not selling to engineering today, you're selling to supply chain. And they're on a mission to get middlemen out of the mix. They want to see your books. They want to know how basic you are. They want to know where you got it. They want to look at indexes for feedstock for your products. So you're talking about sophisticated purchasers buying consumables, I suspect buying all services. So we're certain that as tough as it is, it's going to create a paradigm shift in the U.S. frac market, not for the whole industry. If you're a small E&P, you're not going to source all your chemistry directly. You're going to let that come through your pumper. But we think there's going to be a permanent shift in the U.S. My personal view, a bunch of these pumping assets are going to trade hands. They're going to trade hands at 20 or 30 cents on the dollar, and the new owner of that asset's going to run it like a company runs a rig company. The drilling rigs don't go to the mud warehouses and pick up mud from a wholesaler every time they move the rig. The industry got that kind of stuff out of the mix years ago, but that's effectively how part of the frac industry works. So there's no way that the supply chain at the oil company is going to tolerate that. So as tough as it is, we see this as an opportunity for us in a very oversupplied equipment market in the U.S. So we don't need the whole industry to go to this model, but if 20% of it did, it's enormous, and we make the stuff that they pump. I'll say anecdotally today that we are selling to logistics companies in the U.S. that slurry our chemistry to sell it to the big three pumpers who sell it to the E&P. We're very grateful for the business, But how sustainable is that model? It's probably not in this environment. So we're going to capitalize on that in the U.S. We've got very strong leadership at AES Frac Fluids today. Business is being led by a 44-year-old chemist who was a principal in a frac fluid supplier for years. We're going to take advantage of our mud relationships where we can. We're not going to take too much work too quick and have it go badly and cost us mud business that we desperately need. So we're going to be cautious and methodical about this. In Canada, there's not 50 pumpers. So I don't believe the shift's going to happen. We're going to very deliberately respect the supply chain model that exists here. But the pumpers need us to give them what they pump for less money than where they can get it elsewhere. And if we can, then we think they'll buy from us. We're not going to go around them in Canada because we'll be in the penalty box and sell nothing.
Okay, that's great detail. Thanks a lot, guys. Those are all my questions.
Your next question comes from Steve Kammermayer of Claris Securities. Your line is open.
Oh, hey, guys. It's just in the production chemicals business. So you did talk about the treatment points. It looks like up 31% for the year, up 15% in the quarter. I was just wondering if the volume gains you saw from the increase in treatment points, would that have been offset by the reduction in volumes on those sort of maintenance-type chemicals or preventative maintenance-type chemicals, so that total volumes would have been flat?
Steve, I'd like to pretend that we're so dialed in that we know exactly what the reduction was in scale and corrosion inhibitor. We don't. It's anecdotal. I sat on a pickup in Midland Tuesday morning with Paul Stevens, our Texas vice president, and he did three calls with his people helping them optimize at the wellhead. Corrosion and scale are probably 15-20% each of what you sell your customers, and everywhere possible the customer's using a little less than they did a week ago. So, you know, it's a material change in what you're selling them, and it's a higher margin product if you're a basic manufacturer. Even with big price concessions, we can be in the black on that stuff. Nelco and Baker make the stuff and they make money when they sell it, as they should. They're probably experiencing the same thing. So we don't have a quantified amount, but, you know, top line at JChem and PureChem, in an environment where the customer doesn't lose money when they produce oil, I'd say all things being equal, sales are up. Maybe they're up 10 or 15%. Because people go back to long-term preventative treatment programs. Okay. So for us, I mean, if guys are trying to build models, there's torque in price, but there's also torque in volume because people have to go back to long-term prevention. It's like our health. I mean, if you don't have any money and you have to pay for health care, you eat, but you don't do preventative things, your life gets shorter, so you want to try and change that. That's what's happening at the pump jack today.
Okay.
And I will add, it is unsustainable. You cannot spring leaks in pipelines as an industry with all the headwinds against fossil fuels. So are these paradigm shifts forever? In my opinion, no chance.
Okay. And then maybe just on 2016 a little bit, the growth in treatment points, is that the 15% we saw in Q4, is that a pretty good number looking into 2016 as you slowly grow at the business?
Well, Stephen, we're not going to provide forward-looking guidance financially or on metrics. So unfortunately, we can't give you a number on that. Obviously, we have people on the street and in front of customers every day trying to grow that number. Our expectation is that we will continue to take share, but we're not going to give guidance as to what that trajectory looks like.
But, Steve, we're as feisty as ever. Our competitors are consolidating. private guys are in the red, PE guys are in the red. So yeah, we're going to go for it. We're going to try and win new business. We're committed to science, solving problems. We've got the tools in place on the ground through scientists in these labs. They're not there because we want to buy analytical equipment. They're there because that's what it takes to solve problems, to win business. So we're hopeful that the fact that everyone's getting squeezed to drop lifting costs makes technology highly relevant, problem solving highly relevant. And this optimization,
It's opportunity.
We have to coach them through how to do that without springing leaks in lines and wrecking their pumps downhole. You got to get them through it, and then later you go back to more and you charge more.
And there's lots of opportunities for, since we're a smaller player taking share and so much of the market is held by the big boys, there's lots of operators that are open to listening to new ideas, getting us to propose treatment regimes for them. And the other key point in my mind is the number of feet on the street and in front of customers and in the field in PureChem and JChem is higher today than it was a year ago. And at the end of the day, we need to have the manufacturing, we need to have the technologies, but at the end of the day, you need the field force, the sales force to sell and execute on this. And so that's why we're very confident that we will continue to take share in this market.
Yeah, and you know, and maybe proof positive, guys, for as much as preventative treatments are down by customers, our solid chemistry plant is running two shifts today. It's the only part of JChem that's two shifts, so we're nowhere near full, but we got two groups working in that place because that technology is unique to us, it works, and people are buying it.
Okay. So that's great. Just moving to the drilling fluid side here, you talked about rationalizing some costs, but keeping people. Where's the opportunity to take out costs? Is that more on, I guess, on your supplier side, or where would the opportunity be, and how much do you think you could take out of that?
Well, we got to have the right amount of people for the work. We know the ratios of headcount to mud jobs. We started this privately 15 years ago. We understand what it takes to get the job done operationally. So we're going to have less people, and the people that are in the drilling mud industry in our company and our competitors, they're going to have to work for less money. The directional hand on location that was making $1,400 a day 2 years ago is making $600 today. The rig hands are going to make less. The mud hands are going to make less. Our obligation to our people is to stay in the black so that those people have somewhere to be and we can take advantage of that sales outlet for chemistry. It's not a lot of supply chain stuff, Steve. We largely self-supply. So those costs are already wrung out of the system. You know, the tough part is this bulge of oil-based mud that the big three don't want to pay Republic to get rid of. So they're doing what they should do. They'll put it on the rig for nothing to try and establish a relationship and get out there. And that's what the headwind is in the mud business today in the U.S. So it's less people, and we got to pay them kind of what the formula allows to stay in the black. And we understand that, and we're prepared to do what it takes. I'll highlight, you don't hear us talking about doing that, treating production. We're going to run this as four businesses. We're going to do the right thing. We're going to be honest with our people and tell them that we got to do what it takes to keep all four parts of this place in the black. And ideally a year from now, we've got five legs, not four, because we've got a real business selling frac fluids that also needs to be in the black.
Okay, that's great. Thanks a lot, guys. That's all I had.
Your next question comes from Mike Mazar with BMO Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Hey, good morning, guys. Really helpful call so far, which is becoming more and more rare these days. But so thank you very much for that commentary. with the compliments out of the way, I do have two maybe a little bit more critical questions. One, you mentioned balance sheet preservation and improvement as a priority. In the spirit of every little bit helps, why are we bothering to continue to pay the dividend?
That's deliberate on our part. We want to signal to people that longer term, we're low capex, asset light, and as industry conditions permit, we would turn back on a dividend. That's clearly not happening until, number one, the customer gets in the black, and then obviously volumes go up. There is an upstream sector to sell into. So it's kind of a reminder that we're a little different than an equipment company. Mike, we did talk about whether it should be zero, but the point is to remind people that longer term, we're a consumables business that can generate free cash flow. We're not going into equipment. We're not going to eat all of our earnings to have centrifuges and trucks and tanks. We're going to turn inventory, and if we can afford it, because the industry changes, we're going to give some of that money back to people.
Okay, that's great. Second question is, on the G&A, and a little bit to Steve's point, it hasn't really changed at all from kind of now to from the beginning of the year. Is there much you can do going forward to try and reduce that, or is it a matter of you can't, or you just kind of haven't tried yet?
So I would not say that we haven't tried, because we definitely have taken actions. A lot of that, Mike, is currency effect, because our business in the United States is much larger, and the JCAM business has been growing, so it's been adding U.S. dollar G&A, and that gets converted, just like our earnings do, into a $1.30, $1.40 number. We have reduced compensation. We have reduced headcounts. We are in the process on the drilling side of reducing, compensation further. And we are now looking at some of the fixed costs of the business that could involve closing some office spaces and some warehousing. So all that stuff takes time. We also carried a lot of cost on the drilling side throughout 2015 in, call it, anticipation slash hope of a turn. And so a lot of what we're doing on the drilling side is happening here in Q1 2016, unfortunately. But, we're working on that in real time. So there will be some reductions in G&A from 15 to 16. And, we're not asleep at the wheel.
Sure.
Yeah, we've looked very hard, Mike, at what does every mud plant and warehouse take in terms of activity to stay in the black, and can you mothball it and normalize some trucking for a guy out of another facility and save money? So we're all over that stuff as we speak. The rig count's going to go down before it goes up, so we're going to do what it takes to keep both mud businesses in the black.
Okay, that's great answers, guys. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Ian Gillis with First Energy. Your line is open.
Morning.
Morning.
Hi, Ian.
You spent a fair bit of time talking about producers wanting to reduce lifting costs in the U.S. Could you give us a sense of how some of your customers are behaving and whether that may be having any impact on pricing and customer switching, acknowledging that the production chemical side is a bit stickier or much stickier product offering?
Well, you still have to treat the production with chemistry. You got to treat the water, but if you can reduce corrosion and scale treatments or biocide treatments, you are. It's our job to help them do that without cutting their own throat. So it's very service intensive, call it. It's optimization intensive, but that's happening across not just the U.S., but Canada, Ian. Lifting costs here are high, too. I think you see almost none of that behavior in the oil sands, I should add. The long-term view of that customer is different than, call it, conventional oil or these fracked oil plays in Canada and the U.S.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful. And With respect to your exposure on the production chemical side, I mean, do you guys have a sense of how much would come from, call it the sub 50 barrel a day wells, or that sort of market? Because I'm just wondering, with respect to that production, at what point, I mean, is it worthwhile for it to come, put it back on and or treat it, and your exposure that there?
Oh, well, our biggest market in the U.S. for production chemicals is the Bakken, Mid-Continent, and Texas are starting to be pretty close. We've really grown in Texas since Southwest Treating became part of the business. We have 20 people on the ground in West Texas today. 2 years ago, we didn't have anybody. Our job is to help them not shut the well in, because then they buy nothing. So you're optimizing everywhere you can, Ian. We read the same stuff that you guys do. There's parts of the Eagle Ford that are okay. My view is the focus needs to be West Texas. That, I believe, is going to be the future of the U.S. oil field. They can get that oil to market. The state wants the oil field. You've got stacked formations, so guys can make production out of a whole bunch of zones, either out of a single well or do reentries long term, do workovers. So we're very focused on West Texas.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for the color today, guys. Appreciate your candor in a challenging market.
You got it. Thanks.
Your next question comes from Jason Zhang with Cormark. Your line is open.
Thanks. Morning, guys. Just had one quick one on trying to square, you know, the fact that, you know, Big Mud, as you call it, is sort of giving this stuff away today, and the fact that, you know, you kind of call the drilling fluids as an outlet to additional sales. Does the fact that they're, you know, getting on additional rigs today with free mud kind of worry you in terms of your ability to continue to try to grow market share?
No, it doesn't. We're winning new work in West Texas with our MMH technology. One of the smaller integrated E&Ps notes our technology in their IR is saving 5 days, because you can stop the well from going on vacuum while you drill it, so you don't need to run intermediate casing. So longer term, the solution for the industry to drill for less isn't unit price, it's technology and execution.
Right.
So, you know, are we going to give up some work because we don't have a bunch of extra volume we want to put out for zero? There might be some interruptions there, but it's our job to be, you know, with our customer nonstop, emphasizing that unless you only want two guys to buy from when the industry's busy and there's a shortage of people, we need to be able to make it through this. And so we basically have to ask for their support and be allowed to stay in business. And I think the smart E&P, they want to see that. There's a well-known CEO in Calgary who said a week ago that if margins get any worse for services, a bunch of guys will throw in the towel and their costs will actually go up. So I
right.
think smart guys on the other side of the desk understand that if we can't stay in the black in 2 years, they can buy from Halliburton or Schlumberger. And if
right.
they wanted to do that, they already would be. So I think we can hold what we have. It's our job to figure out how to make money out of that, and our commitment to shareholders is that we're going to accomplish that.
Right. So maybe put another way, in this environment, you maybe leave some stuff on the table, but when the mud business in the U.S. normalizes, I guess that's potentially another sales channel that you have open to you that you may not have had.
Sure. When all this oil-based mud that they don't want to store or dispose, when it's gone, the new stuff isn't free. You've got to buy diesel, distillate, or mineral oil, and then put chemistry in it. I don't think those guys are going to give that to people for nothing, because it costs $700 to $1,200 to build a cubic meter of that stuff.
Right.
So once that bulge works through the system, I think you get more normalized conditions for the mud industry.
Great.
And I'll remind people, I've been a mud guy for 20-plus years. That circumstance is unprecedented. 10 years ago, nobody needed oil-based mud because they didn't drill horizontals. So it's a double-edged sword. You need this complex stuff to get these build sections cased so they don't fall apart. And for the time being, the music has stopped, and there's no chair for that stuff.
All right, thanks. That's helpful. That's all for me.
Your last question comes from Elias Boskolos with Industrial Alliance. Your line is open.
And that has to do with working capital unwind. The majority of the working capital unwind has occurred through sort of a delta in accounts receivable and accounts payable. Do you see any opportunity, and I'm kind of relating this to cash on hand or actually how much you might go into your senior line or get out of it, to move inventory down, or is that sort of a new structural level because of all the build-out in plants and that?
Ilya, you missed the first part, but I think we caught the gist of it. We see further working capital unwind as the rig count has fallen over the last few months into 2016, and as if the rig count continues to fall, there will be further working capital unwind. Some of that will be inventory. A lot of it will be, as you described, AR versus AP. On the drilling side, inventory is pretty much tied to the number of rigs you have out. You have roughly twice as much inventory on hand for each drilling rig that you're working on because you need contingency materials in case you run into a technical problem or a kick. But as you also noted on the inventory side, as we've continued to build out manufacturing plants on the chemical side in particular, as we have a much more sophisticated procurement process that, you know, acquires materials all around the world, brings them to North America, finishes them off into goods at these manufacturing facilities, then sends them out to warehouses to be staged. I don't expect a significant drop in our overall inventory number in 2016. I see more of the working capital unwind on the ER side, as you identified.
Great. Well, thank you very much for the color, and thanks for all the detail on the call.
There are no further questions in queue at this time. I turn the call back over to Mr. Tom Simons for any closing comments.
Well, I'll wrap up by thanking listeners for their time. We need to thank our customers for their business and for hanging in there with us. We're going to work hard to lower your lifting costs, give you solutions at the rig, hopefully be relevant to you at the frac spread, and then maybe most importantly, we got to thank our people. We're asking them all to do more for less. We're asking our drilling people to understand that the right thing to do for the business is to adjust our cost structure in drilling, but not hamstring our ability to grow our production chemical business by just doing some across the board from the corner office cut. So we really want to thank our people. You can trust us. You can count on us. We're going to survive. You're going to have somewhere to work in the future. There is room in the oil field for a number three in the chemical business, and that's where we're headed. I'll wrap it up and say thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's conference call. You may now disconnect.